And now, from one of America's top four hospitals, it's Talking About Your Health with specialists from Cleveland Clinic. Here's your host, Melanie Cole.
Approximately 1 million Americans have Parkinson's disease, and more than 50,000 Americans are diagnosed every year. My guest is Dr. Hubert Fernandez. He's a professor of medicine at Cleveland Clinic's Lerner College of Medicine and the head of movement disorders at the Center for Neurological Restoration at Cleveland Clinic. Welcome to the show, Dr. Fernandez. Tell us, what is Parkinson's disease and who is at risk for this?
Well, Parkinson's disease is a neurological disorder, and it's what we call a neurodegenerative disorder. It affects an area of the brain right in the middle. We call it the midbrain, responsible for coordination of movements, coordination of thoughts, and sometimes coordination of feeling as well. And for whatever reason that we don't completely know, that small area in the brain, that coordinating center, degenerate sooner than all the rest of the brain cells degenerate as part of normal aging. So there is an accelerated degeneration of that small area, and therefore things or functions that rely on coordination are affected. So people with Parkinson's disease feel a little stiffer, they feel a little bit slower, their walking is not as smooth, and those are the visible ones. And then the ones that you can't really see a whole lot is, their thinking and planning and processing can be a little choppy as well, just like their motor behavior, but that's something you may not see a whole lot. So the people, your other question is the people at risk for Parkinson's disease. Well, about 5% or so of Parkinson's disease comes directly from a genetic mutation. There is something in their genes that is not hardwired correctly, and therefore they develop Parkinson's disease. But for 95% of the cases of Parkinson's, we don't know the exact cause. It's not a gene mutation. Maybe we feel that they have what we call a genetic predisposition to it, meaning they're predisposed to it, but they need some environmental trigger for this cascade to happen and for them to develop Parkinson's. Now, what are the known environmental triggers? There are a few. These are just risk factors. They don't cause Parkinson's, but they have people exposed to this. These situations can have a slightly higher chance of developing Parkinson's. One is having a relative with Parkinson's. Especially if your relative developed Parkinson's disease at an earlier stage, meaning 50 years old or younger. So first-degree relatives of that patient with Parkinson's, early onset Parkinson's, are at slightly higher risk than the normal population. Another one that we know of and that has been studied a lot would be patients who have been exposed to insecticides and pesticides. So farmers are at slightly higher risk for Parkinson's. Although a different kind of Parkinson's, welders and those exposed to manganese fumes might be at higher risk for Parkinson's. Aging is probably the number one risk factor for Parkinson's. As we grow older, the risk for Parkinson's is much higher. In fact, if we all live till the age of 120, then almost all of us will have Parkinson's disease because it just catches up.
That's very interesting, Dr. Fernandez. So, listeners always want to know symptoms. What might they notice in themselves or in their loved ones that would send them to see you to get it diagnosed?
Yeah, so the most dramatic ones would be the one that we often, that anyone can see, is a shaking or a tremor condition. So when their spouse or their father or their mother used to not shake, and then their hands start shaking while talking to them or watching TV or eating and stuff like that. That's what we call the resting tremor, and that's a cardinal feature of Parkinson's disease. Now, not everyone shakes. About two-thirds, 70% of Parkinson patients will shake, but 30% will not. So for those that don't shake, what do they do, or what? How do they feel? Well, the next two ones would be stiffness of the arms and legs and slowness and decreased dexterity. So you would see Parkinson patients, maybe some of them may not be swinging their right arm or their left arm. When walking, they might be dragging their right leg. When writing, their writing might be very small, or it gets smaller as they keep writing, what we call micrographia. And then there are all these supporting symptoms of Parkinson's. You may or may not notice them, but they're there. For example, lack of facial expression. Parkinson patients are often mistaken for being depressed. Parkinson patients also have a softer voice, and they're asked to speak louder many times because they have difficulty being heard. And in some patients, there is a shuffling gait, and they may have falling. So Parkinson's disease, just like any illness, has a wide disease spectrum of severity. So some have Parkinson's. They don't even know they have Parkinson's. They live their life without even knowing they have it. And some are definitely more affected by Parkinson's and have very significant symptoms from it.
So, Dr. Fernandez, we don't have a lot of time, but we would like to discuss diagnosis and the current treatments. So if you would, for us, tell us, how is it diagnosed?
For the most part, Parkinson's disease is still a clinical diagnosis, meaning we don't have a blood test or an imaging or a scan that can tell us, once we get it, aha, you have Parkinson's disease. So in some patients, we might get a blood test, we might get an MRI, but it's there to rule out other causes of Parkinsonism, but it's not there to rule in Parkinson's disease. So for the most part, it's the presence of having tremor on one side, or stiffness, or slowness, or walking or balance problem that cannot be explained by any other condition at the right age group that gives us the presumptive diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. Now, recently there is a type of scan. All scans we'd had so far are what we look at the structure of the brain. So if you have a tumor or you have a stroke, you'll see it, the scan will be abnormal. In Parkinson's disease, the structure of the brain is normal, but it's a chemical imbalance in the brain. There's a lack of dopamine. So now there is a functional scan that looks at the function of the brain instead of the structure of the brain. And it's called a DAT scan, dopamine transporter scan. And when we get that, if there is a decrease or a lessening of the uptake of the dopamine cells, then the patient has presumably Parkinson's disease. So that's very helpful. The problem is it's not the definitive answer, because Parkinson's disease has brothers and sisters that look like it and smell like it. They will also be abnormal in that DAT scan. So this scan will be good at differentiating Parkinson's disease from other mimickers like brain tumors or brain infection or strokes, but not for teasing out Parkinson's disease from its brothers and sisters. As for the treatment, this is at least one good news I can tell you. Well, there are two good news that I can tell you. The first one is there's a lot of research going on in Parkinson's disease. And when there's a lot of research and we're testing lots of medications, then relief is in sight. And therefore, it's likely that we could develop or make available medications that will improve the symptoms of Parkinson's, if not slow disease progression, if not cure it altogether. The second good news I can tell you is that at least we have choices right now compared to even 10 years ago or 15 years ago. We have lots of medications. The not-so-good news is that they all work on generally one mechanism. We know that in Parkinson's disease, there is a lack of this substance called dopamine. Dopamine is like an oil in the car so that it runs smoother. So without that oil, the car doesn't run very smooth. So without this dopamine, we're also not smooth in our functioning. That's why we're slow and we're stiff. And so all the commercially available medications we have work on either replenishing the dopamine or improving its use or saving the dopamine for longer use. So we have lots of medications, but they generally work on the same bottom line.
So, doctor, if you would for us, please, wrap it up for us. Give hope to the listeners with Parkinson's disease and why they should come see you if this is what they've got.
Well, you know, cures are difficult to accomplish, but it's possible, and certainly the odds of finding a cure exponentially increases the more we study it. That we will stumble on the cure if there are people working on it. And I can tell you that we have ramped up our clinical trial operations, our clinical research endeavors and initiatives in Parkinson's disease, perhaps more than any other neurological illness there is.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hubert Fernandez. We're talking about your health with Cleveland Clinic. For more information, you can go to clevelandclinic.org/neurorestoration. That's clevelandclinic.org/neurorestoration. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.